11. You're not going to believe this. It was true. Lank Skettlish did go walking a lot. He often set off as soon as the morning chores were complete, saying he was going to clear his head, or to check traps, or to find places to set new traps. Never quite answering precisely where he was heading. Never quite accepting an offer to go with him. Perhaps it was Ellen's paranoia. Perhaps Ellen's paranoia had infected her. Still, Shun watched Lank leave and wondered and could not stop herself wondering. Suit, said Shun. How quietly can you move? I have a stealth mode, sport, designed for tracking animals. Shall I engage it now? Yeah. Yeah, do that. We're following Lank. The suit lengthened its arms and gently tipped her over onto all fours, as Shun made a soft, oh, sound. With the longer, strengthened arms, it was surprisingly comfortable and, yes, stealthy. Weight spread more evenly, easier to creep low to the ground. Do you want me to let Lank Skettlish know you'd like to talk to him? No, said Shun. No, that's not what I want. Okay, gotcha. The suit moved like oiled glass, slow and steady. No jerking motions, as if to the rhythm of the breathing wind stirring the small leaves. Never hurrying, never tarrying, never quite losing sight of Lank, never quite closing in on him. The journey was circuitous, at times seeming to double back. Lank knew where he was going. In the dark mud at the base of a sheer cliff covered in vines, where the earth was continually dampened by trickling water, Lank stood before a black open mouth, a crack in the side of the mountain. A cave, long and narrow, the entrance barely wide enough for the suit to fit through, the inner parts dark as memory. Lank pressed his palm against the wall to balance as he shuffled inside. Shun's instinct was to wait, to see what would happen, not to be inside a narrow, lightless crack with a man known to have violent fits of rage. And yet, she'd stayed outside the mountain once before and ended up sunk deep into a situation she could neither understand nor control. She followed, as silent as she could, down into the mountain, into the inside of the world. Only a few paces in, the darkness became absolute. The stone was around her, and she felt the weight of the mountain as if it were pressing on her head, a feeling both unsettling and comforting. Something remembered from long ago, the terror of what might be inside this small space with her. This is why we built houses with windows and blinds. This is why we invented glass. This is why we discovered electricity. This is why we split the atom. It's because this feeling is unbearable. The suit recalibrated its sensors, and the cave interior was more visible through the visor. The floor of the cave was strewn with rocks and small animal droppings, several passageways leading out, but no sign of Lank. On the wall in front of her, there were scratches. Had a bear been here, scraping at the wall with claws as long as a man's hand? But as she looked at them, the scratches seemed purposeful. A small circle within a larger one. Zigzags piled one on top of another. Suit, said Shun. What are those markings made with? The suit said. Paramagnetic salts. Huh. Versatile. What do they symbolize? The suit said. They are a conductive communicator, an aerial written onto the rock.
Hello, said Lank Skettlish. I know you're there.
Shun jumped. She turned around, but there was no Lank. He was speaking through the suit's comms. He could be anywhere.
She said. I happened to spot you.
You followed me, he said.
No,
she said, and then after a pause.
Yes.
What are you expecting me to do about that?
He sounded dangerous as a tiger. She turned in a slow, wary circle. He must be near. The mountain would block transmissions. She watched for the dull gleam from his suit, for the sudden movement that would show him to her, both of them calculating futures, both of them waiting for the worst.
I was curious and I followed you. I guess you could tell me what you're doing here.
Suppose I don't want to tell you.
There was a route through this labyrinth, a way to navigate even the mind of Lex Skellish.
Then you'll have to keep it to yourself literally forever, because you're sure as shit not going to be telling Ellen Bywater, are you?
Lex Skellish laughed. A laugh is a shortcut between one person and another.
Lank's suit prowled toward Shun from a passage to her right. He, too, was moving quietly on all fours. He had been a long way back, deep into the mountain, and Shun couldn't deny her curiosity was greater than her fear. This, too, is the pull of the future. The joy of simple wanting to know.
"You want to see something cool?" he said.
"Always," she said. And it was true. This is what human beings have going for us over the matchboxes and beads. If we are alive, if we are healthy, we want to reach out all the time. We want to trust.
"Look," said Lank,
and at the base of the rock wall, he pushed away a mat of debris of dried plants and soft sand. There, in the stone, Chun saw, outlined with a white, bright ring of LED, a single proprietary fan-tailed data port. She frowned.
"What?"
she said.
"What?"
"So it turns out, I own it."
"This is my island," said Lank,